Hoy One The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Faith Perlow and I have a story about how some American universities are trying to get students interested in solving the world's energy problems. Then, Ana Mateo and I discuss an interesting American phrase that has to do with sausage. After that, Kelly Jean Kelly brings us the second part of our feature on Abraham Lincoln. But first, here's Ashley Thompson.
Toyota Motor Corporation of Japan is one of the world's largest car makers. The company has faced criticism for being slow to develop electric vehicles, or EVs. This week, Toyota announced that it had reached a technological breakthrough in the development of solid-state batteries. The company said it has overcome an issue with the durability of solid-state batteries. It said it is ready to move from research toward production. The carmaker told investors it expects to sell vehicles powered by solid-state batteries by 2027 or 2028. Solid-state batteries use thin layers of solid electrolytes that carry lithium ions between electrodes. The lithium-ion batteries currently used in EVs use liquid electrolytes. Solid-state batteries have been used in small electronic devices like pacemakers and smartwatches. But mass-market production of the batteries for EVs has developed more slowly. Solid-state batteries can hold more energy than liquid lithium-ion batteries. The gain could ease concerns about the limited distance an EV can travel. A Reuters study in March found that 35% of Americans wanted EVs that can travel more than 800 kilometers between charges. That is a distance few currently offer. Solid-state batteries also promise to reduce charging time. Toyota said it expects its solid-state battery would have a charging time of 10 minutes or less. There is also the issue of safety. The electrolyte in liquid lithium-ion batteries presents a risk of fire or chemical leaks. Several car makers and technology companies have tested solid-state batteries for EVs, but they have been unable, so far, to produce them in large amounts. It is hard to design a solid electrolyte that is stable and still carries lithium ions between electrodes. Other major car makers have also noted their efforts in producing solid-state batteries. Nissan Motor of Japan was the first automaker to launch a mass-market EV with its Leaf. It says it is developing solid-state batteries and is working toward mass production by 2028. Honda is also developing solid-state batteries. QuantumScape is an American company backed by Bill Gates and Volkswagen of Germany. It has said it is working with six car makers to develop the technology. Mercedes-Benz, Stellantis, and Total Energies have an agreement to develop solid-state batteries with Taiwan-based battery maker Prologium Technology. Ford, BMW, and Hyundai Motor have invested in Solid Power, which is producing sample batteries. Hyundai has said it plans to mass-produce solid-state batteries by 2030. The EV market leader, Tesla, has not detailed solid-state battery development plans. The company said it has centered its efforts on the production of more powerful 4680 battery cells for its Cybertruck and other vehicles. I'm Ashley Thompson.
At a recent International Energy Agency conference in Paris, government and business leaders said the world is making progress on clean energy projects. However, the world's energy demands keep growing. The leaders said there is an urgent need for investment in green energy and making better use of already existing energy. So, how are U.S. universities preparing their students to work on renewable energy projects? VOA Learning English recently visited with students in the Think Energy Fellowship at Case Western Reserve University's Great Lakes Energy Institute. The university, known as CWRU, is in Cleveland, Ohio. The students spent 1 year learning from energy experts and working on a final project where they presented an energy business pitch to their classmates and advisors. Students receive money for being in the program, too, up to $10,000 for PhD students. The money helps pay for school, but also is supposed to be used as seed money for a business idea. The fellowship started in 2015. Each year, the program accepts 10 to 15 students at all stages of their academic careers. Darren Fashipe is among the fellows. He is working on an advanced degree in biotechnology. He is also working to start a sustainable energy business. Fellow Molly Egan will soon start her fourth year at CWRU. She studies chemical engineering and has an interest in wind energy. And fellow Natasha Rouse recently completed her PhD studies. She will continue working on mechanical engineering, robotics, and machine learning projects.
Jonathan Steirer is the program's operations manager. He said the goal is for students to incubate an idea and turn it into a business. Non-science students, such as those studying business and arts, can also apply. When students from different academic backgrounds work together, Steirer said, a business student can learn a little about engineering, and an engineer can learn about writing a business plan. At the end of the program, Steirer said some students find a new study path that leads them to a career in energy. One group proposed a less costly hydrogen power business called New H2. The group looked at pink hydrogen power, which is created with the energy that comes from already existing nuclear power plants. Another group thought of a small solar-powered engine that could cool the air in a single room. That company is Sol Air Cooling. Most people live in small homes, so the product could make a big difference. The third group worked on a solar energy marketplace for homeowners who want to use solar power without costly solar equipment. The group created a website for the marketplace called Egora. Natasha Rouse worked on that project. She saw the business as a chance for average people to make a difference on the climate crisis.
Frameworks like Egora will probably pop up in the next 5-10 years regardless, and those offer people kind of a lower stakes way into this space, right? You don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars to put solar panels on your roof.
Molly Egan worked on New H2. For many energy projects, the proof of concept and technology are right there, she said. But there are barriers to progress. She said the U.S. electricity grid is outdated, as are rules about how to sell and provide electricity.
There are similar programs at other universities, including Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Columbia University in New York City, and the University of Rhode Island. One engineering school leader likes the fellowship model, but wonders if it goes far enough. Ron Harishandran is the leader of the College of Engineering at the University of New Haven in Connecticut. He said most universities in the U.S. do not yet have a clean energy field of study. Maybe they should, he said. He said the world needs major change in the way it produces and uses energy, but he worries that universities are a little bit scattered in how they are training students. Perhaps, he said, mechanical engineers should be working on wind turbine projects. Electrical engineers should be learning how to move solar and wind energy back into the electric grid. Civil engineers should be learning about sustainable building methods and materials. Harishandran said, the fellowship programs are helpful for students who are not completely sure of their interest in energy projects, but there is no guarantee how students might use the money or that they will follow through on their projects. After all, Harishandran said, the money the programs receive and provide to the students is a gift. He suggested the fellowship programs start to think in the same way as some of the large U.S. government organizations that provide financial aid for science. He mentioned research grants from places such as the Department of Energy, the Advanced Research Projects Agency Energy, ARPA-E, and the National Science Foundation, NSF. They can get strong results because they have clear goals and deadlines. For example, a research team at CWRU recently won a grant of nearly $1 million from the NSF to work on a sustainable manufacturing project in Ohio. Fashipay, one of the CWRU students, made similar comments. He said solving the world's energy and climate change problem is more complex than just saying traditional energy production must end. He said costs must come down and businesses need to see that they can make money working in renewable energy. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Faith Perlow.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Today, we talk about a kind of food, Sausage. Sausage can be made from any kind of meat, along with spices, herbs, sometimes vegetables, and even fruit. My favorite sausage is made from chicken, apple, and the herb sage. To make sausage, the ingredients are mixed together and then shaped into individual servings. High-quality sausage uses high-quality ingredients and costlier cuts of meat. Some sausages are made from parts of the animal that many people may not normally eat. But everything gets mixed up so much that you do not really know what is in the final product. For this reason, seeing the sausage-making process might be a bit unpleasant for some people. In other words, some people who like to eat sausage may not want to know how it is made. If they see all the separate ingredients, they may never eat sausage again. And that is where we get the expression, to see how the sausage is made. If you want to see how the sausage is made, you want to see a complex or messy process. You want to know the secrets, even if they are not very pleasing. We use this expression for any situation or process that happens away from the view of others. And most people would find that situation or process unpleasant. For example, many people like to buy clothing that does not cost much money, but they may not want to know how the clothes are made so cheaply. They would rather not want to know how the sausage gets made. There are other similar expressions. You can also say, we want to shine a light on something. This expression means you want to reveal or expose something unpleasant, or possibly even illegal. Another similar expression is to pull back the curtain on something. This one really explains the behind-the-scenes nature of all these expressions. A curtain is a piece of cloth or fabric that covers a window. It can hide what is happening inside a room. So if you pull back the curtain on a process or way of doing something, you reveal how something is created or how it operates in private. And if you pull back the curtain on a person, you reveal how they act when they are away from public view. You reveal their true personality, or you expose their true intent. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Enjoy using these expressions the next time you want to show the unpleasant side of something. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Thank you, Anna. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. We're joined now by Anna Mateo, who wants to get a bit deeper into an expression that has to do with sausage.
Thanks, Dan. I'm so glad to be here. And yes, the expression is to see how the sausage gets made. It means you want to see how something is made, a process or a situation. But guess what? That process is a little unpleasant. Once you see how the sausage is made,
you may not want to eat sausage again. Dan, what is another situation where someone might not want to show you how something is done?
Well, Anna, this makes me think of a magician. The magician does not tell you how a trick is done. You just enjoy the show.
That's right. A magician does not want to pull back the curtain and show you how the sausage is made.
Well, Anna, speaking of sausage, I have to get going. I'm throwing a party and I need to make sausage for 30 people. Thanks for chatting with me about this interesting phrase.
Wow, that sounds like you have your work cut out for you. Thanks for having me, and good luck with those sausages.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are continuing our story about Abraham Lincoln. He led the United States during the Civil War, which lasted from 1861 to 1865. In that conflict, the Southern Confederacy battled the Union, the states that supported the federal government. Southern states wanted to make their own laws, including those that protected slavery. They were afraid that President Lincoln would use the power of the federal government to ban slavery in their states, as well as in other areas. So 11 Southern states withdrew from the rest of the country. They stopped recognizing the power of the central government. President Lincoln did not think states had the right to withdraw. He said he was fighting to reunite the country. But in time, he accepted that the Civil War would also be a fight to end slavery. Lincoln is known for several qualities as a wartime president. One was how he led the military campaign. As president, Lincoln worked with top military officials to create a plan. They realized that the Union had more resources and more men who could fight than the Confederate forces. So they planned to surround the Southern states, cut off their supplies, and prevent foreign powers from helping the Confederacy. Lincoln hoped the Union's generals could execute the plan quickly and end the war as soon as possible. But the generals were guarded. They did not want to harm their soldiers if they did not have to. They also knew the Confederacy had a skilled commander in General Robert E. Lee. Troops under another Confederate general, Thomas Stonewall Jackson, also defeated the Union Army in several early battles. Lincoln was frustrated with the war effort. He wanted generals who would not only win battles, but chase after the opposing forces and destroy them so they could not fight again. In one famous telegram, he wrote to his top general, George McClellan. Lincoln said, "If General McClellan does not want to use the army, I would like to borrow it for a time." Finally, Lincoln replaced McClellan. Then he replaced McClellan's replacements. Lincoln changed the presidency by being actively involved as a commander-in-chief of the military. He also greatly expanded the powers of the chief executive. Lincoln believed that, during war, the president had powers that were greater than those of Congress and the Supreme Court. As a result, he took many actions that critics, and even some supporters,
considered illegal under the U.S. Constitution. For example, Lincoln spent millions of dollars in federal money without getting permission from Congress. He also limited freedom of the press, restricted mail service, and declared martial law in some places, even when the situation did not require military action. Most notably, Lincoln temporarily suspended the writ of habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is an important right in the American legal tradition. It means that people who are under arrest have the right to appear personally in court. But at some periods, Lincoln ignored that right. He said the Confederacy's rebellion justified his actions. And he said extreme measures were necessary to reunite the country. One of Lincoln's most important legacies relates to slavery. The issue was at the heart of the American Civil War. For most of his career, Lincoln spoke against slavery, but he did not try to bar the custom in states where it already existed. He agreed to leave slavery in the South alone. Lincoln also did not really believe in racial equality. And he worried that if slavery ended in the United States, blacks and whites would not be able to live peacefully together. But as the war continued, Lincoln changed his mind about how to deal with the issue. For one thing, anti-slavery activists were urging Lincoln to end slavery for moral reasons. Lincoln also considered tactical reasons, those related to the war. He saw that enslaved people in the South were escaping to join Union armies in the North. Their actions helped the Union effort. Lincoln also wanted to prevent England or France from helping the South. The Southern states were important trading partners for Europe, but the English and French people had rejected slavery. Lincoln hoped that if the Union also rejected slavery, European countries would support the North, or at least not support the South. So Lincoln waited until the Union won a major battle in Antietam, Maryland. Then he announced that he was using his power as a wartime president to order the end of slavery in the Confederate States. He produced a document called the Emancipation Proclamation. It said that enslaved people in the rebelling states were forever free. Historians note that the act was important and revolutionary, but it was mostly symbolic. The federal government was not able to enforce the order at the time, and it did not deal with enslaved people in other areas. But the Emancipation Proclamation was the beginning of the end of legal slavery in the country. During the rest of his presidency, Lincoln worked in support of an anti-slavery amendment to the Constitution. That amendment, the 13th, was approved in 1865. It officially outlawed slavery across the country. Next week, we will finish the story of Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.